This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Of all the memorable scenes in Netflix hit series Orange is the New Black, one of the most unforgettable belongs to actress Lea Delaria. Now, we won't be playing that scene for you because of its adult content, albeit it's very, very funny adult content. Suffice it to say, a screwdriver is involved. Delaria plays butch lesbian Carrie Big Boo Black, one of the inmates at a federal women's prison. And in this scene, which we can play, she's talking with Pensatucky, an unhinged religious fanatic played by actress Taryn Manning.
Do you think you could help me?
Well, what's hurting?
My mind. I have unclean thoughts. Lesbian content. Since I had Little Boo, I found these feelings of mothering deep inside me. I think someday I might want to have a kid. But I don't want to do it with another woman because those kids, they always turn out gay. Mm. And being queer, that is a really hard life. Mm-hmm.
Orange is the New Black vaulted Delaria into stardom. But for more than 30 years, she's been an established Broadway performer, stand-up comedian, and very talented jazz singer, as you hear in her rendition of Down with Love.
Down with love, let's liquidate all its friends. Moon and June, roses and rain.
Lea Delaria will be singing at Scholars Jazz Club in Boston tomorrow night. We caught up with her yesterday, and our interview covered a lot of ground, from her stand-up career to understanding what butch identity even means to her, to what it was like being the first openly gay comic on late-night television. But we started with where her career started, as a singer when she was just a little girl.
My dad is a jazz pianist, and I showed a propensity towards jazz when I was really young, and he was delighted by it. And he would play the piano, and I would sing with him. And then he just made me put on a little dress and took me with him and took me into the nightclub that he was working at in East St. Louis. And the next thing I know, I was on stage singing with the band.
Wow.
I was a circus act. You know what I mean? It was like, look at the – I was a clown. I was a, you know, like the bearded lady, anything like that. And he kept that up for years, pretty much till I hit puberty, and my mom kind of put herself spread eagle in front of the door and said, you're not taking my teenage daughter into that nightclub with all those men. Of course, now she probably wishes she'd let me go. But
oh. Sorry, I probably shouldn't laugh at that because, I mean, it wasn't the easiest thing in the world for your parents to accept your sexuality.
No, because, you know, Catholic.
Yeah.
Italian Catholic. But honestly, everybody, I say this to all young people who are experiencing problems with their family. Eventually they come around, and eventually my parents came around.
Well, you grew up in Illinois, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me more about growing up. I mean, when did you know that... maybe men weren't your cup of tea.
Are you seriously going to ask me when did I know I was gay?
I think I just did.
No, you totally asked me when did I know I was gay.
I mean, is that a dumb question?
No, it's not that it's dumb. It's just very, it just makes me wish for the old days when there weren't so many gays.
Well, here's why I asked.
When I stood out a little bit.
I mean, I didn't mean to be
I mean, every time I meet these kids and they talk about how they have the gay clubs in their high school, I think I had a gay club in my high school. It was called PE.
Okay, so here's why I asked that question. Because if I remember correctly, in your early stand-up, for example, your childhood and your family and your Catholic upbringing and all the complexities that came along with, you know, being gay—
Right.
That was a major part of your stand-up.
Absolutely. Back then, it was important for me to talk about those things because no one else was doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I made the absolute choice to always be who I am. Because when I looked around when I was a kid, there was nobody.
Yeah.
So I sort of wanted to be somebody. I wanted to be somebody out there for other people to see.
Well, how did you then get into stand-up? Because as you were just telling us earlier, like singing was part of your career from the time you were a kid. Why'd you take the turn into stand-up as well?
I guess my mother and father were always a big influence on me, and they always taught me to think for myself, say what I thought, that there were more important things to do in life than just pay bills. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to be very outspoken, I mean, the person that I am, the individual that I am, stand-up comedy was one of the, it was not even one of the, it was the biggest way to be able to put your voice out there and actually create change or a dialogue amongst people about something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was living in San Francisco, and San Francisco was one of the big heyday places. It was like the place where you would go and do stand-up.
Well, in that sort of like desire to have something to say and to change the world through what you were saying, is that what drove your... I mean, you've had this very sort of in-your-face, brash, comedic style from the start.
Right.
I mean, we were looking for a clip of your of a comedy act of yours to play, but we could not because this is a family radio program. We can't even say, like, what you build your early career as. We'd have to bleep
yes.
it all out.
You have to bleep it all out. Family people, just put my name into the search engine and then tell the kids to leave the room.
That's probably the best way to do it. But tell me, was being bold and in your face, was that just you from the start, or was that just also
that was always me.
That was the way you could also say what you wanted to say?
Please, you saw what name I used to perform under, so yeah,
yes.
That was always me. It was my style. And I was a lot brasher than a lot of people out there. And that was also a choice because I'm a woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a dyke. I'm fat. I have this image. And back in the 80s, women weren't allowed to use those words. You were a bad woman if you used those words. Let's call this spade a spade. You were a bad girl.
Yeah.
I'm making quotations with my fingers, but you can't see them. But you were a bad girl. And, you know, ladies don't spit and holler. Well, I was up there spitting and hollering and using that language and showing that as a woman, you could be anything you want to be.
Yeah.
Even the pottiest mouth in the room. Now, interestingly enough, when I was the first openly gay comic on television in America, it was on the Arsenio Hall show.
1993,
and I used that word quite a bit.
Like 47 times, right?
47 times. Somebody counted. That's why I know that. But after the air was over, everybody disappeared. And we were like, where is everybody? They were all in talking with the lawyer who was saying that they couldn't air me because I'd used those words.
Wow.
And it was Arsenio that put his foot down and finally said, if that is what she calls herself, then that is what she calls herself.
Well, tell us more about that appearance, because you really did break a barrier there by being
big one.
The first openly gay comic on late night.
Yeah, it was scary and exciting and all of those things at once. I mean, you don't start off doing what it is that I did in the 80s and expect it to end up on American television. I certainly, the last 20 years of my career have all been a complete surprise to me. People who are as political as I am and as outspoken as I am, this stuff doesn't generally happen for them. So I couldn't be more thrilled. I'm tickled pink.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about your singing in just a minute because that's such a huge part of your career. But
yeah.
Let's stick with comedy for another second here because I want to
fast
forward to your latest comedy show, which is called The Last Butch Standing.
Yes.
And so obviously there's a lot about butch identity here. Tell us a little bit about that show.
I have been kind of quietly singing and acting for the last few years and not doing a lot of stand-up. And one day I kind of looked around and did not like what I saw within my own community. And I felt that I just kind of said, wow, you have been neglecting stand-up because somebody needs to be out there talking to people about this.
Well, when you say you did not like what you saw in your own community?
I don't like the way butches, I didn't like the way, for example, the way butch dykes were sort of pushed aside by the sort of mainstreaming of our community, the middle class mainstreaming assimilationists, sort of wannabe quote unquote gays and lesbians that are out there.
Uh-huh.
They think of us as sort of a dirty word or a dirty name. That offends me. I have issues with that. So I'm speaking out about that a lot.
Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere I go.
How would you describe what butch identity is then?
Butch identity is a very old school and important, I think, part of our culture. I mean, the reality is butches, we've always been around. You know, they've had a variety of expressions for us throughout the ages. And my favorite being mannish. I love mannish. Mannish just makes me giggle every time I hear it. But what I find is as we as a community start to get the things that we have been fighting for so long, that we're able to get married, that we're able to have children, that we're able to just openly be a family and who we are, as we get those things, more and more we become complacent and find ourselves losing our own identity. And in search of being a part of the quote-unquote norm of the world. And I think that whenever any organization, group, community, or individual forgets their history, they're in trouble.
Well, I'm talking with Leah Delaria. She is, you probably know her as Carrie Big Boo Black from the hit Netflix series Orange is the New Black, but she has had a long and fabulous career as a singer and a stand-up comedian and an actress as well. We haven't talked that much about your singing except for those early days, and we must, because your voice is truly amazing. So you made your Broadway debut in the revival of On the Town in 1998, and we've got a clip here of you singing a big song from that, I Can Cook Too, and this is a Carnegie Hall performance in 1999.
Well, I can cook too, on top of the best in the town. Yeah, I can cook too. My fish can't be beat. My sugar's the sweetest around. I'm a man's ideal of a perfect meal right down to the dirty task. I'm a pot of joy for a hungry bun, baby. I'm cooking with gas. Oh, I'm a gun.
It's fabulous. It's fabulous.
I haven't heard that in ages. That sounded pretty good.
It sounds like Broadway was a long time dream for you and then turned into a dream come true.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think people are really surprised by how much I know about Broadway because I've just always been a huge fan. I mean, inside this big Bull Dyke body beats the heart of a vicious queen, trust me. I love musicals. So when that dream came true for me, that Broadway dream of being downstage center, and I didn't stop the show 8 times a week, but I certainly slowed it down. And that was a really, really exciting thing for me.
Well, speaking of your love of musicals, we've got you and a rendition of All That Jazz from Chicago.
Oh, I'm gonna see my Shiva Shimmy Shake.
About jazz that you love so much, because clearly your voice has got the power and versatility to go in any direction you'd want it to go.
A couple of things. One, it's America's one true art form. It originated here. It's our identity as Americans. I love that you create it then, right as you're standing there, it's created. That there's 4, 5, 6, 7, however many musicians all speaking to each other in a language that they all understand. And it's all happening before your eyes. And when that moment happens, it's gone and you'll never get it again. That's why I love jazz.
And you love it so much that you put out an album called Double Standards. You did covers of Green Day, Blondie, No Doubt, but in a jazz style.
Oh my God, we had such a list of songs for that. Green Day, there's Patti Smith, there's Robert Wyatt, there's all sorts of crazy stuff on it. My personal favorite on that particular record has to be Neil Young's Philadelphia. I do love that.
Someone is talking to me, calling my name, tell me I'm not to blame. I won't be ashamed of
now, I can imagine that folks listening to this about this point in time are yelling at their radios and saying, we love her stand-up, we love her singing, but you've got to talk about the show.
Orange is the New Black, Orange is the New Black.
All right, so you play Carrie Big Boo Black on the show.
I love her.
And let's start off our conversation about it with a clip. This is a scene where Big Boo is playing a trick on Pensatucky. Played by Taryn Manning. It's a great scene. And Pensatucky.
Taryn is so great in this scene. Everybody talks about me, but personally, Taryn is so great in this scene.
Pensatucky believes that, of course, homosexuality is a sin. So your character, Big Boo, is asking Pensatucky to pray the gay out of her.
As I lay my hand on this child's head right here, right now, I ask you, Lord, help her. Help her become Gaylord, no more!
I don't feel any different. Wait, let me try picturing the 2008 U.S. women's soccer team. That usually works. Okay. Kick it. Mate? I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything.
It worked.
I don't like this. Take me back. No, no. Don't leave me here like this. No, no. Don't leave me straight.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take me back.
Well, you've got to tell the story about how you got the role of Big Boo, because it wasn't the way you expected.
They had me reading for the part that Kathy Curtin plays, one of the COs, and got a call from my manager saying they actually love you, but they want you to come in person, and they want to give you a different role. This isn't the right role for you. They feel they want another type in it. So I was like, okay. So I went in, and I read for the part that eventually was given to Lynn Tucci. Anita DeMarco is the role.
Right.
So I go to my manager's office, and he's on the phone with casting as I walk in, and it didn't sound good. And he hung up the phone, and he said, they think that you're not old enough. I think people are always surprised when they find out I'm 55 years old, because I just don't look it.
No. Sorry, that just took me aback, too. You don't look it at all.
I know. And I was screaming and just yelling at my manager. And I remember distinctly saying, if they are writing a show that takes place in a women's prison and there isn't a part for me, I quit. I quit. I'm done with this industry. I'm done with this business. If you need me, I'm in Europe singing. And when I got off the plane, my phone machine was filled with messages from my manager going, see, you had your little hissy fit, and now you have to come back. Because they really did find a part for you.
They essentially wrote it for you, right?
They wrote it for me. It was it was originally a part that was only in a couple of episodes. As each episode happened, Carrie's part got bigger and bigger. It was really exciting for me.
Wow. Well, what was it like to work with a cast of basically all women? I mean, there aren't many shows that are like that.
I know. I'm sitting here. I'm just rocking back and forth because I don't want to interrupt you. You know what I mean? Because it's so exciting to be doing it that whenever anybody asks me that question, I get really excited. Megna, you never see it. You never see it. To be involved with all these creative women. And, you know, this is my entire life. I've been doing this. This is my life's mission, right? So here I am working with a bunch of other people who that's been their life's mission too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not only are we doing this thing that's going out on the airwaves, but people are actually being tricked. I mean, I think you're probably 4 or 5 episodes in before you realize how feminist the show is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things about it.
You know, we were talking about your breakthrough on Arsenio and your early stand-up when, you know, nobody or almost nobody was talking about being out. And now, you know, fast forward these 30 years and there's this smash hit on Netflix that has these very sort of nuanced and textured and humane and real characters. You know, so many of whom are either gay or, I mean, there's a great transgender character as well. I mean,
Laverne.
That's a huge sea change in terms of just what you've seen in your own career.
It's a big, big change. And I have to tell you, like the way I feel about I feel about this in the same way that I feel about gays getting married, never thought I'd see it in my lifetime. Either one of those things. So for me to see this in my lifetime and also think that I may have had something to do with it, it's so exciting.
Season 2 launches in June.
June 6th,
June
yes.
6th. Can you tell us anything?
Yes, I can tell you that I'm in it.
Anything
that
more?
Laverne's in it.
Okay. I'm
Kate
waiting.
Kate Mulgrew's in it. Natasha Lyonne is in it. These are the things I can tell you. It was created by Jen G. Cohen. Oh, it'll be airing on Netflix. And you know what? I can tell you one thing. I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed. It's great.
Leah Delaria is a stand-up comedian, singer, actress. She plays Carrie Big Boo Black on Orange is the New Black. She will be at Scholars Jazz Club tomorrow night. Leah, it has been an absolute delight to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Megna, you call me anytime. It's a delight to speak to you as well.
Want, love, won't borrow, today, tomorrow.
And Leah will be at Scholars Jazz Club singing, so let's go out with her rendition of Love Me or Leave Me. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
I love you only. Rather be lonely than happy with someone new. Some say the